your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Share Institutes for Reproductive Medicine welcome you to HaveABaby.com Live with host Kim Hahn. All comments, views, and opinions are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. Kim and the doctors from the Share Institutes for Reproductive Medicine cover the questions and concerns couples face when they're trying to have a family, helping couples go from infertility to family. Here's your host, Kim Hahn.
Hi, and welcome to HaveABaby.com Live. So glad to be with you this Thursday afternoon. We are going to have a great show for you. We are going to be talking about what happens when fertility treatment fails, and all of it, not just IVF, but I was actually having dinner with some women this week, and we were talking about this, and we were talking about how women suffer in silence even when they don't get pregnant from month to month, and how we start to feel shame, and we start to make it about ourselves. And it's amazing because, you know, we do suffer so much in silence, and but yet we all carry around that there really is something wrong with us. And so today we have with us Dr. Bayrak. He is the medical director for the Share Institutes of Reproductive Medicine out in L.A., and we're going to be talking about, you know, how do you remain positive? Because if you've gotten to the point of doing fertility treatment, most likely you have suffered many disappointments from month to month, and, you know, the journey just gets harder. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Bayrak. Hey, Dr. Bayrak, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine. Thanks, Kim. It's good to be on the show again.
It's great to have you, and it's really funny. You and I were both out in San Francisco, actually. I just got back late last night, but we were out at the conference for assisted reproductive doctors, the big trade show. And I was actually out with some women, and we were talking about this. They asked me to share my personal story, and it was funny because the women at the table were getting tears in their eyes, and I don't think they were getting it just because of my story, but I think because they had experienced this pain of failure. And it's an amazing thing that we as women feel like, you know, there's something really wrong with us, and that this is what our bodies were created to do. And, you know, not just women that fail fertility treatment, but women today that are listening, that are at home and have been trying for months, you know, they're suffering in silence as well. And we want to talk a little bit about that, and where to find the hope, and how do you remain positive when you feel like you're the only one and the rest of the world is pregnant, when in fact that's not really what's happening.
Well, that's
I know it's a loaded topic, but
it is, but I think it's a very important topic, and I'm really sorry that I missed you at the American Society for Reproductive Medicine meeting. It was a really busy and a very good meeting, actually, this year. It was very productive.
I felt the same way. I felt like there was this positive, I don't know, it was different than in the past years, but I felt like there was this really positive energy, and that the field is moving forward, and there are so many people committed to this, and the new technology and the new products, and just people wanting to educate women. I felt a real sense of, you know, hope and movement forward. I don't know. Did you feel the same way?
I absolutely did. Yeah. I mean, I totally shared the same feelings. It was very informative. There was a lot of influence on the new genetic tests, especially CGH and related tests. There were a number of abstracts and oral presentations as well as posters. So I think we're going to be hearing much more of the newer genetic tests or the screening tests for embryos before the embryo transfer. So I think we're going to inform patients much more, and we'll be able to screen for certain disorders even before the patient gets pregnant. It was really interesting.
Embryologists there as well. Actually, there was one on my flight back to Orlando that works, you know, in Florida, and I noticed that there was a lot of embryologists. So was there a lot of conversation about, you know, what we can do in terms of testing to make all of this more successful?
Absolutely. I think there was quite a bit of influence on doing a full karyotype, which is basically looking at all the chromosomes of each embryo before placing them back into the uterus. And there are now a number of different options Even though we're not talking about that, I guess eventually we will be, because once somebody has a failed IVF cycle, then we tend to be a little more aggressive and involve additional testing, especially on the embryos. The emphasis was mostly on the genetic test and egg freezing or fertility preservation. I think at least that's what I saw in a way, other than just the basic science papers and other topics. So I think CGH, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis or screening, and all its applications are going to be more in a way discussed in the next couple of months to years in a way, and that's going to, I think, improve the overall success rates and the care that we're providing to our patients. It was also interesting that there was a lot of interest in egg preservation or oocyte cryopreservation. I think I saw close to 20 abstracts just in terms of posters in one session only. So there's now a lot of interest, a lot of research being done, and it's only going to get better. So it was really interesting to see that other centers are also picking up and learning this new technology that we also have been obviously offering for a number of years now. So that was very encouraging.
And I don't know if there was a big talk. I did not actually read the article myself, but there was an article that was people were talking about, maybe that had just wound up in the Times, how the age that couples are getting married is getting older and older. So, you know, this is definitely a direct reflection on what could be to come when women try to get pregnant, because as we know, we haven't been able to turn back the biological clock. Egg freezing may help you preserve it and stop it, but, you know, if we are going to continue with these trends of waiting till we're older to get married, then for the most part, that means that women and couples will be even older when they are trying to get pregnant. So knowing that all of this is working hand in hand could really be a benefit.
That's true. I mean, obviously, rewinding the biological clock is a good concept in theory, but there's obviously no such thing. Nobody can rewind the biological clock because that's not possible. But one can preserve the eggs now. So I think that's really going to be the thing in the future, where a lot of women are going to be interested in preserving their fertility through egg freezing. So because it's not possible to rewind, and let's forget about rewinding, even to stop the biological clock, that's not even possible. Regardless of pregnancy, regardless of using birth control pills, regardless of using Lupron or IVF cycles, whatever you do, we cannot obviously stop the biological clock. That's not possible, at least with today's technology, I have to say, because things are changing so quickly that some things that we were doing, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, we no longer are doing now. So the meeting was very exciting, but I really want to focus on failed IVF cycles and treatments overall and what to do next. And I think you brought up a great point that a lot of people are concerned, especially women, when they have a failed treatment cycle. I'll just take that back a little bit even. People are really actually frustrated at the minute that they walk into our offices because of the inability to conceive, which in itself brings a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, and people start questioning themselves, interestingly enough, even though there may not be anything wrong or it may just be a minor issue in a certain percentage of the patients. Even before the failed IVF treatment or before the failed infertility treatment, patients, I think, coming in with quite a bit of frustration and a lot of questions, undoubtedly. That obviously brings a certain level of anxiety.
Do you think, though, Dr. Berg, let me just ask, I mean, the fact is we know that it takes women, on average in the U.S., at least 8 to 9 months to get pregnant. That's the average. So some are getting pregnant faster, some are getting pregnant slower. But do you think that it's almost like, TV and movies have kind of idealize this to make us think it's going to happen the first month, or do you think it's part of that whole sex education that we're getting when we're, into puberty in school that's scaring us to death to not get pregnant, that where is this false sense of, that this is going to happen the first time you try, and where does that come from? I mean, I'm just so curious that, you know, none of us really have a realistic understanding of what it does take to get pregnant.
Yeah, that's a great point. There was actually a very large study done by our Director of Patient Relations, Pamela Mattson. She looked at close to 12,000 to 15,000 women and did a survey on what constitutes the biological clock and when does fertility decline and so forth. And I think three women got it out of, you know, the old questions, right, out of about 15,000. This was a worldwide study that she did and published. So I think it's a lack of knowledge in fertility, lack of communication and education. I think that should be incorporated into sex education without a doubt, because the perception is still the fact that fertility does not decline until 35 or 40 or 42.
Right.
So most people say, well, I'm still 37, 38, so I have another 2 years to go. But in fact, it may have been already a bit late, and that may be the time to consider going into a fertility physician.
I just wonder, have we gone the opposite way, though, when we're teaching our, and believe me, I have a daughter, and she's 8 now, but, you know, when she, I think, you know, we may have even talked about this, I do want her to be scared to death when she's older. But then I'm thinking, wow, what are we doing long-term with that concept? Maybe there's a better way.
Right, and obviously there are still a lot of unknowns on, you know, which patients should freeze their eggs or consider, you know, fertility preservation for future. And it's very difficult to predict what happens in the future in terms of careers and lifestyles and obviously marital status or other options. So there is really no correct answer to that, but any person who's, with the knowledge that we have today, let me put it that way, any person who's interested in preserving their future fertility, I think regardless of age, should consider this new technology. Although ASRM still, our governing body, still considers egg freezing as an experimental procedure, and that's due to the low numbers of full-term pregnancies or live births that have been reported in the world, which is just around 300 to 350, I guess, now. So for women who are in their teen years, 20s, 30s, obviously just taking care of them and trying to live a good, healthy life, limiting, you know, alcohol exposure, avoiding any tobacco exposure or other drugs or poor lifestyle is going to improve their health and also their biological clock.
It won't preserve it, but it won't speed it up.
Right.
Correct. That's really what we want to.
It won't rewind it. There's no such thing. So
right.
There is no rewinding of the clock, obviously. There's not even stoppage of the clock. So those things are the things that we cannot control. But one thing we can do is preserve the eggs. So now we have the option of freezing the eggs for later use if it's indicated. Again, some women may freeze their eggs, but they may not need it. So it comes down to considering it on an individual basis and offering this technology to women who are simply interested in it without, you know, without any clear future plans.
Right. And let's talk about that when we come back a little bit, and then we'll talk about, you know, how do we get through the failure that we feel. But it almost seems like this could be an insurance policy. You know, you don't know if you're going to use it. You don't know if you're going to cash it in, but it's there if you need it, and it's exciting. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be talking more about failed fertility treatments, and really when do you move on, and the next steps, and most important, how to remain hopeful, because there's a lot of hope out there, and just from that meeting we came to. We'll be right back. You've been listening to HaveABaby.com Live.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you been searching for an online resource that brings together all of the most current and vital information on infertility causes, diagnosis, and treatment? Welcome to HaveABaby.com, your online infertility resource. Here, you'll find hundreds of pages of articles on topics related to infertility, plus a forum where you can post your questions to infertility experts around the country. But that's not all. HaveABaby.com features profiles of infertility specialists, news, and upcoming events related to infertility, as well as stories from other people that have been through or are going through infertility. HaveABaby.com is a community centered around people just like you. Log on today for exciting information on your latest infertility breakthroughs, including a new procedure that could double your chances of having a baby through IVF. Or visit the discussion boards and post your questions for infertility experts around the country. HaveABaby.com, your online infertility resource.
Conceive Magazine is America's first magazine about making babies. In the pages of Conceive, we inspire and inform future moms with comprehensive information about women's health and fertility, as well as various methods of conception. Conceive Magazine offers comfort and emotional support to women contemplating starting or expanding their families by consulting noted professional experts and by sharing the insights and experiences of others who have already begun the journey. In every issue, you'll find the latest news in conception, fertility, and the newest products on the market. Well-balanced information on exercise, nutrition, and healthy lifestyle tips to help you prepare for pregnancy. Real-life success stories from women who have achieved their dream of parenthood, and so much more. To subscribe to Conceive Magazine or to get more information, go to our website, conceiveonline.com, or call us toll-free at 1-800-758-0770. Conceive Magazine, a must-have resource for women beginning one of life's most important journeys.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to HaveABaby.com Live with host Kim Hahn. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Kim.
Hi, and welcome back to HaveABaby.com Live. We're here with Dr. Bayrak, the medical director for the Share Institutes of Reproductive Medicine out in Los Angeles, California. All right, Dr. Bayrak, let's just finish up what we were talking about, because this whole idea of egg freezing, you know, I'm thinking, you know, if I were in my 20s and I, you know, knew that I wanted to spend time developing my career and traveling and just, you know, saving money, whatever it might be, that freezing my eggs would definitely, you don't, like you said, you don't know if you're going to use it, but it could be that insurance policy. Do you know much that about, I know that at this meeting we were at, they introduced what they called the HOPE Registry, which I believe we're going to start now tracking egg freezing so we can get a better handle on how successful and what's going on with that.
That's correct. The registry will include all patients who are freezing their eggs, and we'll follow it on the long run. It'll be a cohort type of, in a way, follow-up over the years. That's going to take quite some time, obviously, because a lot of women who are going to freeze their eggs are going to be not using them for a while, and that's really the purpose of doing it anyway. And in some women, even if they're freezing their eggs, they may not need it. And I think you brought up a good point just before the break, that it becomes an insurance policy for them. And it truly is. I mean, a lot of the things that we invest on or do on a regular basis, we don't end up actually using.
Right.
This may be one of those things, and it's just so early to say whether that's going to be the case or not. I think for a good proportion of those women who freeze their eggs, it is going to be an option, because they're also going to be comfortable in making their decisions in terms of their career. Their marital status may change, but their potential fertility will remain the same. So even though it won't be the rewinding thing, it'll be conserving the fertility. There's also, interestingly enough, a lot of other technologies that are being done that are probably even less applicable than egg freezing, such as cord blood banking. This is very popular. A lot of women after delivery, they save the cord blood in the event that it needs to be used for the child in the future, in the case of some leukemia or some lymphoma or some kind of a tumor, that those stem cells may be used for treatment. So a lot of those cases, I would say almost 99% of the time, there is really there won't be any indication or there won't be any need to use those cells. But obviously it's being done because cancer is scary and fertility is not to most people.
But why is
unless
that?
They know about it.
Are you talking that if you, like, for example, if I had a baby and I saved my daughter's cord blood,
right?
How does that help her in the future with getting pregnant?
It does not at all. No,
oh,
it's a totally
okay.
different thing. I was just referring to conserving certain tissues, cells,
got it.
For future use. And one of that is cord blood sampling and storage.
Okay.
And that is probably a technology that is not being utilized as much as it is in a way promoted. But I think egg freezing has much more potential applicability and usage for women in the future.
Yeah, I think too.
But cancer is scary. Again,
yes.
When somebody talks about cancer, and if you get it, cancer in the future, we may be using these stem cells. But fertility is not scary, and it's not immediate to a lot of people. And I think that perception needs to change. And I think education is very important. You brought that up earlier in our discussion. That I think education will overcome that wrong perception that either, you know, fertility can stay the same or it doesn't change until late years, or that one will always have the options because IVF is there and it's cured to all diseases, which is obviously not.
Well, I have to tell you, somebody else on the plane last night, because everybody coming back, so many had attended this meeting, and a woman brought up a really good point to me about egg freezing. And her point was that if we're freezing our eggs and we know that they're good eggs, we would thaw them and use them as needed versus, and I know it's much better to store an embryo and thaw it, but her point was maybe we wouldn't have all these embryos sitting on ice and women having to make that most difficult decision that once they've created their family, what do I now do with these embryos, which is that could be a whole nother topic that we could discuss. But her point was, is if we had our eggs on ice, we knew they were good, they were the, you know, a very big contributor, that you thaw them and just use one or two as you need them. And then you haven't created, you know, the embryo that you have to maybe, you've got 10 left over and you don't know what choice you're going to make down the road, whether you're going to use them, donate them, or thaw them and, you know, discard them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Kim. And it all comes down to having a choice in life. Women didn't have this choice. Men did because they could freeze their sperm before undergoing chemotherapy or any other treatments that would compromise their fertility potential. And obviously, physiological changes are different over the years in men and women because men always produce some sperm, at least, that can be used for pregnancy. But women have a reserve, and obviously it declines. There's no way to rewind it or even stop it at a certain point other than conserve it. So I think that's very important. Again, educating women, educating the general OBGYN community is extremely important so that women know that now they have a chance. There's also a lot of confusion about whether this is a new technology, should we do it or not, should we wait, and so forth. That's all valid discussion. In terms of the registry, it's good to have a registry, but that registry also should be uniform based on what centers do in a way. So that, I think, information should be also present because over the years, technologies change. We tend to improve majority of the time success rates and innovations. Overall, techniques change and success rates increase. So the way that the eggs are being frozen, let's say, 5-6 years ago, we no longer do because we have a better understanding about the egg, what it's sensitive to, what it is resistant to. So now we're able to freeze eggs with very high success rates. The survival rates are very high. And most importantly, now we can find out what we're freezing as opposed to just freezing eggs.
Right.
So with some of these newer technologies, we can actually test each egg, which is what we do actually from the start, and freeze those eggs that are chromosomally normal with about 90% confidence. So I think that's also very important to understand that egg freezing is great, but it also comes down to how you do it.
Right.
So if you're 30, you freeze your eggs today, in 10 years you thaw the eggs and nothing survives, or they all survive but you don't have a single chromosomally normal egg or embryo, well, all that you did was for no reason. And this, again, is a problem because there are still a lot of unknowns and there's no standard or uniformity in the techniques, in the way that we freeze eggs. And when I say we, I'm referring to all centers that that offer this technology. So I think it's important to understand the physiology, educate women about this, and have them make a decision, give them the choice so that they can decide on what to do, whether to entertain this option, even though they may not need it, even though it's not guaranteed, but that there is a good option, that there's a good possibility that it's going to work in the future, although it's not 100%.
Right, and so much of that goes
in medicine or life anyway.
Exactly, and I think you start with education. Will every clinic in the country that is doing any kind of egg freezing be participating in this HOPE registry, or?
I think they have the option of participating. Again, there are different techniques being used by different centers. I would say in about 2 to 3 years, a lot of the centers will have to switch to testing each egg and freezing eggs with the latest technology called vitrification, which is what we have been doing for the last 4 years. So I think there's going to be a lot of switching in the techniques and the way that the eggs are preserved and that the patients are counseled about that. And once that's established, once we reach a plateau level, or once we come to a common ground that, well, this is really the right way of freezing eggs and informing patients that there is a certain, you know, acceptable success rate, after that point on, I think the registry will make more sense, as opposed to including all the cases that were done, you know, over the last, I mean, egg freezing has been done for the last 20 years, but
right.
I would say 99% of the cases have been done in the last 2 years. So if you include all the cases that were all experimental and say, well, this is really not a good technology, well, that's not right, because you're really not providing the most up-to-date information and success rates. So, again, it comes down to educating the public, especially the OBGYNs. That's very important because they're going to be seeing young women.
Yeah, they're the first
mirrors, breast exams, right? So
exactly,
and it's going to be possible to educate those women about their fertility.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Dr. Bayrak. We're talking. We've been talking about the egg freezing and the future and all the positive things that are going on in the reproductive endocrinology community. When we come back, we're going to get to our topic, which is failed treatment and how to remain positive. So this is all very exciting. You've been listening to HaveABaby.com Live, and we're going to be right back after the commercial break.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, I'm Kim Hahn, the founder and CEO of Conceive Magazine and the host of Conceive On Air and HaveABaby.com Live. I'm really excited to introduce to you our very first book, The Fertility Journal, A Day-by-Day Guide to Getting Pregnant. This comprehensive hardcover guide will help you increase your chances for conception and prepare you for a healthy pregnancy. It has plenty of space for you to track your own reproductive cycle. The Fertility Journal is an essential book for any woman starting a family. To purchase the book or learn more about it, you can visit any major bookstore, Target, or you can go to www.thefertilityjournal.com.
Ever think about the future? Wonder what it'll be like? Ever think about how your decisions today affect your future? The March of Dimes does. We think about a future where all babies are born healthy. We're here to help you get healthy before you get pregnant. Visit www.conceiveonline.com and click on the link for Conceive's preconception health assessment tool in conjunction with the March of Dimes. There you'll find a tool you can use to find out how your health today will affect the health of your future baby. Go ahead, see what the future holds for you.
The Share Institutes for Reproductive Medicine are proud to sponsor HaveABaby.com Live. With 10 centers, 5 satellite offices, and 15 outstanding physicians throughout the country, the Share Institutes make up one of the nation's largest networks of IVF practices. The Share Institutes have roots that run deep in the field of infertility treatment. Founder Dr. Jeffrey Share established the first private IVF practice in the country in 1982 and has been an influential pioneer in the field for 25 years. The Share Institutes are renowned for compassionate, personalized fertility care backed by leading-edge technology and ongoing medical breakthroughs. The Share Institutes for Reproductive Medicine website, HaveABaby.com, is one of the most comprehensive infertility resources on the web today. Log on to HaveABaby.com for more information on the Share Institutes Reproductive Medicine. HaveABaby.com, your online infertility resource.
Conceive Magazine is America's first magazine about making babies. In the pages of Conceive, we inspire and inform future moms with comprehensive information about women's health and fertility, as well as various methods of conception. Conceive Magazine offers comfort and emotional support to women contemplating starting or expanding their families by consulting noted professional experts and by sharing the insights and experiences of others who have already begun the journey. In every issue, you'll find the latest news in conception, fertility, and the newest products on the market. Well-balanced information on exercise, nutrition, and healthy lifestyle tips to help you prepare for pregnancy. Real-life success stories from women who have achieved their dream of parenthood, and so much more. To subscribe to Conceive Magazine or to get more information, go to our website, conceiveonline.com, or call us toll-free at 1-800-758-0770. Conceive Magazine, a must-have resource for women beginning one of life's most important journeys.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to HaveABaby.com Live with host Kim Hahn. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Kim.
Hi, and welcome back to HaveABaby.com Live. We're here with Dr. Bayrak, the Medical Director for the Share Institutes of Reproductive Medicine out in L.A. Dr. Bayrak, so we want to talk about how to keep women hopeful, and hopefully the first two segments, I think we talked about, even though we kind of got off path a little bit, we talked about hope and what's happening and all the work that's going on to give women access to even greater treatment and preserving fertility. But if somebody's going through it right now, what do you do when they walk in to give them hope? Because as you said, by the time they get to you, they've already suffered months and months of disappointment.
Well, that's correct. We do a detailed consultation, detailed history, and an evaluation of lab tests if there are any. If not, obviously do a basic infertility workup. At that time, obviously there's a certain level of anxiety because it has not happened, and there are a lot of unknowns. So that obviously is an issue that needs to be addressed. But I think knowing what the problem is relieves a lot of that stress. Knowing that woman is ovulating, or knowing the fact that she has an acceptable number of eggs for her age group, knowing that the sperm is okay or slightly damaged, knowing that the tubes are open. So that evaluation actually relieves certain level of stress. But if there are certain abnormalities, such as low ovarian reserve, which is majority of my practice, that obviously brings another level of stress because time is an issue. So it's not easy to deal with it, and I think we addressed this in one of our prior shows. Mainly it comes down to educating the patient, understanding the physiological changes over the years, and talking about treatment options, whether that's just simply taking Clomid for anovulation in early infertility or doing IVF with CGH testing for late and complicated cases. So it truly depends on the case, Kim.
But I have a question. Do you think, I'm sitting here trying to think, you know, do you think sometimes maybe women stay too long maybe at the OB office, you know, with all good intention, but might just suffer that whole suffering in silence for too many months before trying to go see a specialist? Because I'm not even sure a lot of, you know, women may not even know what a reproductive endocrinologist is. You know, a lot of us think until we absolutely need one, we think that our OBGYN is the doc to get us pregnant and help with that. Do you think sometimes maybe we stay too long spinning our wheels and more women should maybe see reproductive endocrinologists quicker?
I think that's certainly true. The problem may be at different levels based on multiple variables, but it can be... just the comfort level with the OBGYN, because OBGYNs obviously the routine GYN exams and would then be involved in the prenatal care as well as delivery and postpartum care of that patient. So there's a certain level of relationship established, and it may be difficult to break that relationship and move on to another physician. That may be one reason. Sometimes it comes down to basically ignoring the fact that there's infertility and that there's a significant problem and just continuing to try on their own. Other issues may be related to finances. A lot of the insurance companies don't cover even sometimes initial consultation, interestingly enough. So
that's
that may be their barrier, obviously. And sometimes lack of education. That's another issue. Again, we mentioned this before. There is that wrong perception that fertility declines after 35 or 40. The initial drop is at 27, and then the second drop is at 32. And then 35 to 37, there's a significant drop compared to the prior years. And then after 40, again, there's another significant drop. So I think it's very important for women to understand that and educating the general public and especially the OBGYNs would be very important so that these patients at least come in for a consultation, not necessarily follow up or do treatment, but at least come in for a consultation and see where they stand. We also actually work closely with OBGYNs where the OBGYN can be totally involved with their fertility evaluation, testing, and even treatment, and the reproductive endocrinologist can be a consultant on the side. So that's also a possibility, and we have actually certain OBGYNs in our community who feel very comfortable in managing patients that certainly do until, you know, the last couple of procedures, the egg retrieval transfer that we take care of.
Yeah, and I can imagine, too, that sometimes, you know, the OB office tends to be, for the most part, a positive environment because there's lots of pregnant women and there's tons of babies on the wall. And, you know, there's a lot of activity surrounding getting pregnant and having your dream come true. Whereas if you leave that environment, I wonder sometimes if you start to feel like there really now is something wrong with me. Like, I just don't want to accept that. But I don't think that that's really the case, you know, when you walk into a reproductive endocrinologist. But it almost makes me feel like sometimes we think that the RE is similar to the oncologist. Like, you've got a terrible problem and, you know, you need to, quote, be cured when, you know, maybe you need a little more, a closer look or another little, you know, treatment but not necessarily that it's devastating.
That's certainly true. I think you're referring just a little earlier to an important factor in the evolution of disease once it's diagnosed, which is denial. That is mm-hmm. also certainly present in a small percentage of our patients, where, well, a I'm ovulating, I have regular periods, and I'm 43, so it should happen. Or, you know, my mom went into menopause when she was 55, and she had me when she was 39 or 42, and, you know, why is it not happening? What's the problem? So, again, that comes down to lack of knowledge in fertility and education. And again, we as physicians have the responsibility to educate the public. So it becomes difficult to deal with it, as you mentioned. So if you go into an oncologist's office knowing that you have cancer, or you go into an oncologist's office and somebody says, well, based on the pathology report, you do have cancer, and now we have to start chemotherapy. That's obviously devastating news.
Right.
But it is not uncommon to for us to do an obstetrical ultrasound in our office when you can pretty much hear the heartbeat from the parking lot. That, I think, also encourages women that there's always hope, especially with the newer technologies. That's certainly possible, although, again, we're not rewinding the biological clock, we're not reversing anything, we're not even stopping, but we're basically increasing the chances every single month, which, again, overall increases chances of getting pregnant. So with the newer technologies, I think women should be encouraged, not discouraged, to come in for a consultation with a reproductive endocrinologist. There's really no downside to it.
No, and this is what you
do. Coming in and getting that education, there's
right.
really absolutely no downside to it. It's just like an hour of consultation, and we
it's just like you feel like if you get close to it, maybe I'm going to get it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not going to go there. But to me, this is what you do day in and day out, whereas an OBGYN, like you mentioned, they're doing so – I mean, they're dealing with women in menopause. They're dealing with, you know, women that, you know, getting identified with GYN problems, and they are dealing with pregnancy and delivery, but – they're dealing with breast cancer, you know, all these different things, whereas all you do day in and day out is think about getting women pregnant and the world of reproduction.
That's true. I think it's an area that has not received interest as it should have. And again, you mentioned great things, really, you know, routine pap smears, GYN exams or breast exams, just basically preventative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call it. So preventive medicine is very important, and that's going to be a thing in the future. We want to prevent disease before it happens, because when it happens, it's already too late. Obviously, we can treat certain diseases, well, a number of them, although there are certain things that we cannot change still as of 2008. So that preventative medicine mentality should also go into the fertility preservation, fertility health in a way. That's also certainly important, but it's very difficult to incorporate that into a routine GYN or a regular checkup, because there's just so many things that we have to cover that becomes something that's left out.
Exactly. All right. Well, we're going to have a break. We come back, I have a question from a 34-year-old listener, and let's see if we can answer her question, give her some hope. You're listening to HaveABaby.com Live with Dr. Bayrak, and we'll be right back after the commercial break.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
When you're dealing with infertility, you want answers and you want them as fast as possible. Did you know there was a place you could go to communicate directly with more than a dozen infertility specialists free of charge? If you're looking for answers to your infertility questions, visit the discussion boards at haveababy.com. You can post your questions on any infertility-related topic to physicians around the country and communicate with other people who are going through the same experiences as you are. Because the boards at haveababy.com are monitored directly by physicians, you'll usually get a response within a few hours. Registration is free and only takes a minute. For answers to all of your infertility questions, log on to the discussion boards at haveababy.com. You'll have access to hundreds of pages of information and be able to communicate directly with more than a dozen infertility specialists. Haveababy.com, your online infertility resource.
Conceive Magazine is America's first magazine about making babies. In the pages of Conceive, we inspire and inform future moms with comprehensive information about women's health and fertility, as well as various methods of conception. Conceive Magazine offers comfort and emotional support to women contemplating starting or expanding their families by consulting noted professional experts and by sharing the insights and experiences of others who have already begun the journey. In every issue, you'll find the latest news in conception, fertility, and the newest products on the market. Well-balanced information on exercise, nutrition, and healthy lifestyle tips to help you prepare for pregnancy. Real-life success stories from women who have achieved their dream of parenthood, and so much more. To subscribe to Conceive Magazine or to get more information, go to our website, conceiveonline.com, or call us toll-free at 1-800-758-0770. Conceive Magazine, a must-have resource for women beginning one of life's most important journeys.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to HaveABaby.com Live with host Kim Hahn. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Kim.
Hi, and welcome back. We're here with Dr. Bayrak, and we're talking about how to basically survive any kind of failed fertility treatment. Where's the hope? And Dr. Bayrak, I have a good question. I have a bunch in front of me from listeners, but here's one that says, my doctor says I have endometriosis. She's already done two IVFs and they've failed. She's only 34 and she says, quote, I have no other issues. What do I do next? I mean, she's 34, already done two IVFs, and sounds like the hope is starting to dwindle.
Yeah, I mean, I also get relatively similar questions on our discussion board on our website. Well, one thing that she should do is not give up. That's definitely one thing that she should do. She should also find out what went wrong. What happened in those two IVF cycles that resulted in a negative outcome? That's extremely important. Knowing the cause is half of the treatment. So those two cycles need to be evaluated by the physician who treated them and try to find out whether it was a sperm egg issue, whether it was an implantation issue, whether there is additional testing that needs to be done to understand whether there are additional variables involved in that case. Beyond all, one has to understand that there is a certain percentage of women who get pregnant through IVF or through infertility treatments per attempt. So
right.
It's never 100% by any means.
It is the Cadillac. I can imagine that this woman at 34, you've already done the Cadillac of all fertility treatment. I mean, it's better than nature itself, right? Your chances are better than, you know, being a 20-year-old, obviously without issues. But, you know, I can imagine how she's starting to feel pretty hopeless at this point.
Sure, absolutely. But obviously there was a reason for her infertility. And at least for my personal practice, majority of the women have some type of an egg reserve issue, a declined or declining egg reserve issue. And it really truly comes down to, again, in the majority of the case, not all, to the embryo. And we have now certain genetic tests that we can select out the normal ones from the abnormal ones and place them back in selectively. That would increase their chances per attempt because you're putting back normal embryo. So that would be my advice to her, or to seek another opinion, perhaps. Another option.
Exactly.
Just simply call another reproductive endocrinologist and get a different angle.
Because
so,
I would say, definitely, at 34, you know, there's no time to be given up now.
Sure.
After two failed, and because she's saying she doesn't have any other issues. And I guess, to me, that means, well, there's something, but we just haven't found out what it is, like you were saying. But even the whole idea of checking, you know, immunological issues, and not every doctor, I understand, is totally on board with this being a, you know, reason for not implanting and don't necessarily do all the testing that needs to go on. Do you think that's something she needs to consider as well?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think it's important to look back and see what went wrong. That's really the most important thing. and then to see what the next option is, whether that's continuing with a similar or same protocol because it just comes down to a numbers game, or whether there needs to be a change in the protocol because the medications were not started correctly, or some things got changed along the way, or whatever happened. I think fine-tuning the protocol, looking at what the exact issue was in the last two cycles, and if there's really nothing, everything has been perfect, then it's probably the embryo. And in those cases, now we have the option of testing each embryo. So that will be, I think, important to understand. But again, if that technology is available in that center, then that's going to be available. But if it's not, then one may need to look into considering options of testing embryos. And I think that will be the way to go, certainly in patients with one or two failed IVF cycles, which is quite a bit of frustration, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, absolutely. And the Scheer Institute, though, wouldn't you, I've heard Dr. Scheer talk about this, that, your the practice that all of you are part of is really, so much of it is seeing women that have had failed cycles over and over again. So maybe women shouldn't be afraid to just pick up the phone and call the Scheer Institute to, ask the questions, what else is out there? Isn't that true that you see many people that have had failed IVFs in the past?
Sure, and we also see a lot of second opinion patients actually just simply call and schedule an hour. We talk about a number of different options and review medical records and so forth. So that's something that we do routinely.
Wow.
And that's, I think, very important.
And you'll give somebody actually an hour to sit and talk about their past?
Yeah, it's a full hour, sure, absolutely.
Wow.
Because, sometimes it's more than an hour, actually. But it's a minimum of an hour or so. That takes a full history. Evaluation of the case, talking about different treatment options, some of the risks, benefits, and also some of the specific tests that the patients may need. We also talk about CGH and if it's indicated, obviously, and other options such as egg freezing and whatever applies to that specific case. But it's a full-hour discussion.
Which is amazing. I mean, just to have the ear of, a reproductive endocrinologist for an hour to review your information is great. Would it be really helpful, though, if someone were to call the Scheer Institute, do you want them to come prepared for that hour? Like, do you give them a checklist, so that we're not wasting time, everything that they need to bring with them so that you've got it there?
Sure. I mean, they're recommended to bring in their medical records, a copy of their medical records, or fax it over or scan it. Email doesn't matter.
Right.
It's a telephone consultation. And we also get a detailed history even before they come in for their consultation. So they fill out a certain questionnaire. This is, again, all in advance so that we know what we're dealing with when the patient comes in. So that we can concentrate on certain topics and certain treatment options much more than others, even though obviously everything is discussed and so forth. So that becomes quite handy for us.
Okay, so things like X-rays, if they've had their past procedures that have looked at the uterus, have looked at the tube.
Absolutely. Testing, blood tests, X-rays, any embryology data, if they've done IVF in the past, how they were stimulated, how many medications they used, what was the dose, how many eggs they got, what was the maturity, how did the embryos develop, when they were transferred, were they tested. There are so many variables, so many details that we have to look into, and that's really why it takes about an hour at least.
Well, yeah, and let me ask you a question, though. I can imagine some women saying, I would feel guilty going to my current physician and asking for my records. Like, oh, that's a red flag that I'm going to be seeking a second opinion. What would you say to them?
That thinking has to change, just like the fact that, I'm healthy. I'm not going to see a physician until I have a heart attack. So that's a thinking in the past, and that has to change. We all need physicals regardless of age, and we all have to understand that there are certain things that certain physicians will take care of. There are certain things that other specialists will take care of, and I think it's very important to understand the difference. It's really not right or wrong. It's just a preference to get a second opinion. I also tell even my patients if they have a complicated case or if they need surgery, sometimes that they can even take their films, all their medical records from us, and go in and see somebody else. So I personally give them that option so that you know, they're comfortable, that they know what they're doing, and that they can choose. So
which
that's
is
really
great
important.
Because we all kind of need permission to do that, because sometimes you feel like, you know, you've got this big sign on yourself. But I guess the good news is ask and
yep,
don't worry about it and get that second opinion if you need it. Dr. Bayrock, as usual, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Kim. It's been a pleasure, really.
It always is. And thanks for all you're doing for the reproductive community and women and men as well. And we'll be back next week with another great live show. I want to thank the Share Institute for sponsoring this show and helping couples go from infertility to family. And if you want to get more information about anything we've talked about, get a second opinion, call one of the physicians at the Share Institute. You can go to haveababy.com and you'll be able to get all that contact information there and be able to find out where the local center is for you. See you next week.
The Share Institutes for Reproductive Medicine thanks you for listening to HaveABaby.com Live. For more information, visit HaveABaby.com. Tune in next Thursday for another insightful hour on HaveABaby.com Live with host Kim Hong.